Based on hundreds of millions of real-world tests, the experts at Ookla Speedtest have spoken. T-Mobile is now the best mobile network in America. So you can keep up with all the MLB action from the ballpark to the backcountry because they've got the most advanced 5G, the most towers, and a signal that goes farther than ever. Oh, and did I mention the largest satellite-to-mobile network? They're way ahead making sure that the fans experience every pitch, play, and post-game moment. So whether you're streaming the game out and about, checking stats on the road, or experiencing ballpark perks with Magenta status, you're ready to stay connected wherever your fandom takes you. Head over to T-Mobile.com/network to switch to the best network. For baseball fans, it's better over here. Based on analysis by Ookla of Speedtest Intelligence, data first half 2025, compatible device and plan required for T-Satellite. See details at T-Mobile.com.
Love espresso, drip coffee, and cold brew? With the Ninja Lux Cafe, if you can crave it, you can brew it. Espresso? Balanced. Drip coffee? Rich. Cold brew? In a flash. With Barista Assist technology, you brew with no stress and no guesswork. And make perfect silky microfoam hands-free from dairy or plant-based milks. Bring the coffee house home and unlock your favorites with the Ninja Lux Cafe.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kid's PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Welcome to the Tool Shed, a podcast covering all aspects of fantasy baseball to help you win all of your fantasy leagues. From the MLB draft all the way to the show, we're here to help give you the edge in your dynasty leagues. Now, here are your hosts, Eric Cross and Chris Clegg.
Welcome in to another episode of the Tool Shed with Clegg and Cross, brought to you by Rotoballer. This is episode 283. Thank you for joining us. This is live from our hotel room down here in, where are we at? St. Petersburg, Clearwater, Florida, or wherever we are, down here at First Pitch. First time we've done a podcast live together in the same room. But right 2 feet to my right is my 80 grade co-host, Mr. Chris Clegg. Chris, how's it going?
Pretty good. Maybe not even 2 feet away from you because we don't have our recording equipment, obviously, but we have just a USB mic that we are sitting around in the hotel room on a Sunday night here in St. Pete. 3 days of spring training so far, and heading back to South Carolina and Maine tomorrow, but figure we need to get this episode in. We have a lot to talk about, and I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, by the time most of you are up and listening to this on Monday morning, Chris and I will probably be both in the air. I fly out 6 a.m., and he flies out, we fly out 7:30?
Yep.
7:30, so we will both be in the air, both getting back home, you know, 9, 10 o'clock or so to our normal areas. But yeah, like Chris said, we have a lot to talk about here. But before we do, the usual housekeeping. If you enjoyed this podcast, please rate and review. You can find us on Twitter, Chris at RotoClegg. I'm EricCross04. Show is at ToolShedPod. Make sure you check out both of our personal platforms, thedynastydugout.com and ToolShedFantasy.com. All of our rankings are there. We're doing daily, you know, dynasty notes and write-ups and a lot of other fun stuff on both of those platforms. And make sure to check out both of the, what Rotoballer's got going on, excuse me. Use that code TOOLSHED, get you 10% off on any premium package. They got a lot of great articles, tools, everything to help you succeed this fantasy season. We're both writing over there. A lot of great stuff, so go check that out over at rotoballer.com. Let's get right into it. So we're going to talk about just MLB guys today. We'll do another episode later in the week about prospects. We've both done a couple games. Chris got an additional game today while I was doing the mixed labor auction, but a lot of fun players to talk about here. And we're starting off with some middle infielders, starting off with Zach Geloff, you know, who has been hitting the ball very well so far this spring, hitting for power, and coming off a pretty fun debut last season in 300 plate appearances at the Major League level. 14 home runs, 14 steals, 267, 337, 504 slash line. And the quality of contact, pretty damn good, 11.1% barrel rates. And the speed is there as well, 91st percentile sprint speed. But at the same time, zone contact, 72.4%. Overall contact, below 67%. So a lot of fun in the profile, Chris, but some red flags here. But so how are you kind of valuing Geloff moving forward? I mean, obviously he's a guy that's shown 2020 upside, maybe with a lower average. So fun profile, but hard on the value right now.
Yeah, he's really tough, but I do believe that Geloff is somebody that's going to provide you the value, even if it comes with a low batting average. We know the strikeouts may be a concern. The contact rates are a little bit concerning too, but he is off to a hot start so far this spring, albeit with a lot of strikeouts. He's hitting .389. He's had two home runs already in 18 at-bats and three stolen bases as well. So those are obviously things that you like to see early on and like with a player. And I know spring training stats don't really matter all that much, but with a younger player like Geloff, it is encouraging to see him at least out there doing some damage early. We know he's going to play every day. He's going to hit at the top of Oakland's lineup, and it's Oakland, but I do think there's 2020 easy potential and maybe room for more. And even if he hits 240 or 250, you can take that at second base with the power and speed that he brings.
Yeah, absolutely. And many of you probably remember that when he first came up and was just going bonkers first few weeks, I was preaching sell high, which I think was absolutely the right call at that time. But now I think it's swung the other way a little bit, where I do think he's a good value, because if you're getting, even if he's hitting 250, and you know, with a probably a lower OBP as well, but if you're getting 20 plus, like this, he has the power to go 25-25, maybe not 30-30, but if you're getting 20 plus from that second base spot, that's pretty valuable and probably a back end top 10 second baseman. So I think he's actually a decent buy right now. I wouldn't go out and run out to try to acquire him, but definitely worth inquiring to see what the price tag is in your league. And actually, I put out a tweet from the Toolshed account about who would rather have long term between him and a guy like Anthony Volpe, who was coming off a 2020 year of his own, but outbait with a very low average. Chris, who would you rather have moving forward, a guy like Volpe or Zach Geloff?
I don't think they're all that dissimilar, but Volpe does play in a better park and lineup, which gives him a little bit of an edge. And I do think that long-term, the contact skills are probably better with Volpe. We've seen it in the minors, and I'm just a firm believer that Volpe bounces back this year. So while the profile is not all that dissimilar, I'll bet on Volpe long-term over Geloff, even though they're both 2020 guys. And we saw Volpe go 21-24 last year, so a really good season from him. Both guys struggle with average, but I do think better days are ahead for Volpe.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree there. I mean, Volpe probably hits for the higher average moving forward. Geloff probably has a little bit more raw power. It's very close, but those two are both pretty solid buys right now. Another one I think is a solid buy, too, is Ezekiel Tovar, who's coming to spring training. He's been absolutely red hot. Every day, I swear, it's like I look and he's hit another two or three hits, another home run. It's absolutely raking this spring. Came in stronger, or reported to add about 15 pounds of muscle. That's very intriguing. And, you know, even though the overall line of, 253, 287, 408 from last season doesn't jump off the page at you, he still finished with 15 home runs, 11 steals, 79 runs scored, and 73 RBI. And this is a guy that showed better contact skills in the minor leagues than what he showed this past year, which wasn't bad. But I think you can see a nice uptick across the board. Maybe not a ton more runs than RBI as that Colorado lineup. I mean, it's not terrible, but it's not great either. But maybe you see him, so far so good with the added bulk, right? It's he's hitting for more power here in spring training. We'll see if that translates to the season. But maybe you see 20 home runs, 15 steals, and a .260 average along with like 80 runs and 80 RBI. It's not one a guy that's going to stand out in any one area, but that's pretty solid across the board, and I think he's being pretty undervalued right now.
Yeah, Tovar is noticeably bigger, and I certainly believe that 15 pounds of muscle has been added, and he's hit some really hard balls. He hit one in Surprise Stadium the other day to dead center that was, like, absolutely smoked. And I think he hit one again on Saturday that was 425. Didn't have the highest EV, but still, like, there's some really good distances. Good home run pop. He's hitting for contact. And that's what Eric said. Like, he hit for contact in the minors. He was a great contact hitter. I almost thought he was a slap hitter when I watched him. He just make contact and slap at the ball. But so far this spring, he's looked really good. You know, stats aside, it's like, okay, this guy is bigger. He's stronger. He was 21 all of last year. So when we look at that, when we think about that kind of profile, of course he's going to get better. He's going to be aided by Coors Field. I think there's a realistic chance that he hits 270 this year, hits 20 home runs, and then steals 15 bags. And that's a valuable player. Last year, he hit 15 over 581 at-bats. Like, there's no reason to think that 20's out of the question here. So I really like what Tovar's done so far, and I may be looking to go trade for a few shares of him in Dynasty.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And the quality of contact last year wasn't even that bad. He was 8.1% barrel, 88-mile-an-hour average exit velo, and a 36.2% hard hit rate. Doesn't walk a lot. He's always kind of been that more of aggressive guy, but contact skills have always been pretty decent. So yeah, I think he's a solid target here. Let's keep it with Colorado for one more player. Go Elijeris Montero, who has been raking so far this spring. In 17 at-bats, he's 6 for 17, 2 doubles, 2 home runs, 2 walks, and 2 Ks. A lot of 2s in there. But absolutely smoking the ball so far. And he's a guy that always shows some pretty solid power coming up through the minor leagues. And, you know, the first 2 years with Colorado, kind of slightly above average, you know, quality of contact metrics. But the issue with him, well, first off, there's no real spot for him right now without an injury. You know, you got McMahon at third. You know, there's really, you know, you got Brian over at first, Brendan Rodgers at second. You know, he's never really played much outfield that I recall. So don't really know where he fits in. And then obviously the other big issue with him, a lot of swing and miss, 34.8% strikeout rate over nearly 500 plate appearances in the major leagues. You know, zone contact wasn't actually terrible. It was below average, about 79.5%. Overall contact, though, was definitely well below average, down near 60%, and high chase rate, super high chase rate, 43.2%. Do you see a future, Chris, where Montero is a, you know, fantasy viable player? I mean, I do get a little Bobby Dalbec vibes. I kind of wonder if he's ever a guy that hits enough to be a starter. But what are your thoughts on Montero?
He seems like he always might just be this, you know, power darling. Yeah, he's exciting. He hit a ball 116 miles an hour on Saturday, if I'm not mistaken. He has 2 home runs. He's hitting 353 so far this spring. So some encouraging stuff there. I don't know, like, can he find a spot? It's possible. I mean, he got 284 at-bats last year in the majors. So, you know, it wouldn't shock me if he did get some at-bats. Maybe he finds a regular role with some injuries, but we'll see. I still think he's just a fun player that hits for power, but how much contact does he make? That's the biggest question mark. So, you know, Montero is one of those that may get some buzz because how hard he hits it, but how useful is he for dynasty purposes? Yeah, maybe not so much.
Yeah, I'm kind of right there with you. I just don't think he ever hits enough to be a guy that's starting regularly. Maybe he gets in for a few weeks here and there if there's some injuries to, you know, McMahon or whoever else. But as of now, yeah, he's not a target of mine. But he's been hitting very well this spring. We'll see if this can, you know, gain some momentum for him into the regular season. All right, let's keep it in the National League West. We got two more guys to talk about here in the National League West. Let's go over to the Los Angeles Dodgers with James Outman, who had a very sneaky good season last year that I think flew under the radar a lot, didn't get as much love as he should. This is a guy that actually finished, I believe it was 14th in the National League in WAR last year. And obviously he's a good defender, which helps in WAR, but offensively he was pretty solid too. 23 home runs, 16 steals, scored 86 runs, 248, 353, 437 slash line. And so far this spring, he's been one of the hotter hitters in all of spring training. He's 6-for-14, a double, 2 home runs, 3 walks, 3 steals. Also has struck out 6 times, which, you know, Chris, last year was obviously one of the issues with him. 31.9% K rate. Always got us walked at a solid clip. He's a good runner, good quality of contact as well. But another one where, I mean, do you think he can take that next step? Like, do you think he can make enough contact? I mean, obviously in OBP leagues, I think he's top 100 right now. But in average leagues, you think that average ever gets there so he can take a step forward into the top 100?
Yeah, it's possible. I think that with the skill set, you don't really need him to hit for a super high average. But if he can hit 260, then he's absolutely going to get there. There's power. There's never been any questioning that. He's hit some pretty majestic home runs this spring. Hit 2 home runs already in 14 at-bats. He has 3 stolen bases. We know he's going to steal as well. I think there's a legit shot that he's a 30 home run, 15 stolen base bat.
Yeah.
Maybe even 30-20. Now, 30 may be pushing it a little bit, but I still think we can see him easily hit 27 home runs this year as long as he stays healthy. He hit 23 last year in 483 at-bats. There's no reason to think that he can't do that again with more at-bats. There's 30-20 there. So yep. I'm in on Altman for sure.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And like I said, if you're in an OBP league, absolutely. He already should be top 100 now. Like a guy that had a 353 OBP last year with the amount of runs scored, home runs, steals he had. And if he takes a step forward, yeah, he's probably going to be hitting a little bit lower in that Dodgers lineup, but it's the Dodgers, so hitting 7th or whatever in that lineup isn't bad. That's like hitting, you know, 4th or 5th in most lineups. So, yeah, a lot of good with James Outman. So, definitely a great kind of value target. It's not getting as much love as he should. Let's go over to one of the Dodgers' rivals here with the San Francisco Giants and talk about Luis Matos, who is off to a hot spring as well. 5-for-15 so far with a double, 3 home runs, no steals, but 0 walks, only 1 strikeout. But I think the notable thing, obviously, here is the power. And who knows, you know, what it'll look like during the season. Matos has never been a guy that had a ton of power, but contact approach always has been very good with him. He had a zone contact just a tick under 90% last year and overall contact around 83%. But is he more, Chris, is he more than the 15 home or 10 steal guy? I mean, that still provides value if he's a, you know, have a decent average, maybe scores, you know, a decent amount of runs if he can get higher in that lineup. But I don't know. I still don't see a ton of, you know, upside here. Maybe this power, he can sneak up to 15 plus. That might even be generous, though. Do you think that power is there for him?
Well, he's gotten jacked this offseason. Like,
yeah,
he looks massive. So that's encouraging. And then the powers come with it. He did it 12 homers last year in the minors in just 254 at-bats. So that's obviously notable that he did hit for some power there. The EVs were actually pretty good in AAA. And then to see him get even stronger this offseason, like, his biceps are huge. Mm. Now, we know he's going to hit for contact. Hopefully he's not sacrificing any of the contact skills to hit for power. So far, so good this spring, though. 3 home runs. 2 came in 1 game. I know it's a small sample, but he passes the eye test, and he's hitting for power. I think he could be a sneaky source of some speed, too. Maybe he is a 15-15 guy, but the average is going to be incredibly good because the contact skills are so good here.
Mm.
So I'm in on Luis Matos. Like, I think he's a sneaky buy-in dynasty that won't cost you anything at all. And you can see where it goes if he turns it to a tomato again, you just drop him. Like, it's not that big of a deal.
Yeah, that's the thing. The price tag is so low right now that even if he doesn't take like a big step forward, he's still a good buy regardless. All right, let's go over to the National League Central here for a couple more names from the Pittsburgh Pirates. First off, we got Henry Davis, who I actually just grabbed today for $1 in the mixed league auction for labor. Use him as my 5th outfielder, maybe my C3 as well. So that's kind of fun. Every time I look at Pittsburgh box score, I swear he's got another like 2 balls over 100 miles an hour. Absolutely raking the spring. You know, last year, you know, wasn't the shiniest debut for him in the, you know, in the major leagues with Pittsburgh, and really a guy that's lost a lot of gleam especially even when he was still a prospect over the last year and a half or so. From, you know, early on, like, oh, he was the, you know, early draft pick and had all that allure. But it seemed like the last 2 years, it steadily declined in value for Davis. But last year, only hit .213, 7 home runs, 3 steals, and 255 plate appearances. But so far this spring, 5-for-13, 2 home runs, and like I mentioned, a lot of hard hit balls. Even some of his outs have been very hard hit. And this is a guy that was already gaining a little bit of buzz moving back to catcher, which definitely helps his value. Given his power and a little bit of speed he adds, Chris, I don't think a 2010 season from Henry Davis is out of the question this year.
No, and what makes him so valuable is that he's going to get catcher eligibility. He's going to play outfield on the days he's not catching. We know they have Yasmani Grandal, so that's encouraging, obviously, that, you know, they can rotate time. Davis is going to get catcher eligibility, hopefully pretty quick. He went to drive on this offseason to train as a catcher. Also, with his bat speed, he increased his bat speed pretty significantly at driveline, and the exit velocities have shown. He is hitting for a ton of power. He's hitting a lot of line drives. It's really, really encouraging, and I think Davis, especially if you're in an OBP dynasty, is an excellent buy. He plays up a lot in OBP,
yep.
But there's sneaky contact, too. He's a good contact hitter. He's going to play very well, so Henry Davis is somebody that I'd be looking to get pretty much anywhere you can, because the value, I think, is still really good right now. But with a good rest of the spring, he is going to soar.
Yeah, this is, we're talking about a guy that had a .415 OBP in the minor leagues. And yeah, some of that was he got hit a lot too, so that definitely inflated the OBP a little bit. He got hit 28 times, Chris, in 122 games. Quick math, that's like one every 4.5 games or so, which is just insane to think about. But still, a guy that walked over 10%, didn't strike out a lot either. Like, never had any swing and miss issues. And a guy that, you know, look at his last year at Louisville, 15-10. In the first year in the minors, 10-9 in 59 games, 12-10. Like, he's always been a guy that has, you know, that runs a bit, which is valuable. So, yeah, 2010, like Chris mentioned, he's going to get catcher eligibility again, play in the outfield on days he's not catching. That's definitely valuable there for sure. Another guy who has almost the exact same stat line this spring, Ke'Bryan Hayes. You know, he's 5-for-14, a double, 2 home runs, 6 RBI, same as Davis there. No walks, no Ks, but obviously he's been a guy that's always hit for power, and he's doing that again this spring. You know, seems to be elevating a bit more. I mean, I don't have, you know, ground ball rate right now for spring training. Does that even exist? Do they even have ground ball rates for spring training anywhere?
Probably not.
But so it's hard to see, like, exactly, like, percentage-wise, how much he's elevating right now. But that's really the X factor here. Like, we've seen him steal bags. We've seen him hit for power, just albeit in the ground more often than not. And a guy that's always had, you know, pretty solid contact rates as well. So right now he's been kind of hanging out in the 125 to 150 range of my rankings. But if he starts hitting the ball in the air more consistently, which is easier said than done, but if he can just get it like to 20 to 25 home runs with everything else he brings, this could be a guy that's more of a top 70 to 80 player this year. And I know many are probably tired of waiting for it, and I'm surprised in myself that I'm still like in on Hayes as a guy that wasn't overly high in him as a prospect, but the metrics are there. It's that one, he's one tweak away. Maybe that happens this year.
Yeah, I just saw him today, and he looked pretty good. He hit like a 102 exit velocity off of Grayson Rodriguez. He may have got a second at bat against him, but his other hit came later in the game. But they were both ground balls. Surprise, he hit them hard. He hit one the opposite way pretty hard. He pulled one pretty hard. He's got to lift the ball. He began to do that a little more last year towards the end of the season. Like, the rolling fly ball and line drive rate improved, but the results still didn't come around. The problem is, even when he's lifting it, he's going to the opposite field, and it's just not leaving the park. You look at Hayes' StatCast page, he's always hit the ball really hard. It's not something new. So, like, when you see the exit velocities, it's like, oh man, this is exciting. He's always hit the ball very hard. His average EVs have always been very, very high. But Hayes has got to pull it, and he's got to lift it. So that's something to watch pretty closely here with Ke'Bryan Hayes. There's certainly 22 to 25 home run in the tank. Like, he can do that. Mm-hmm. But he's got to make a couple of tweaks. And while he's having a good spring, he's making contact. He's hitting the ball hard. He made a couple stellar plays at third. Like, we know he's a great glove. But he does need to lift it and pull it more. Those are the biggest things to watch for here.
Absolutely. So I think it's worthwhile. I mean, the price tag isn't overly high on Hayes right now. So if it doesn't work out and he's kind of is what he is, then you didn't really lose anything and potentially get a better player than you paid for. So, yeah, solid investment right now in Dynasty Leagues. Last hitter on the list before we go over to pitchers, Colton Cowser, who yet technically is a prospect but feels more like a major leaguer at this point, so we included them here. A guy that, you know, was pretty much, I won't say universally, but top 25 in a lot of prospect rankings, ones that are more fantasy-focused, but had a really poor showing with Baltimore last year. In 77 plate appearances, one hit only 115, didn't leave the yard once, and hit a 148 slug. Just not a lot of good there. I mean, he walked at a good clip, and, you know, the chase rate was super low, but everything else, like, wasn't impacting the ball much at all. You know, wasn't running, only had one steal. Well, it's kind of hard to steal when you're not on base either, but he's been looking really good this spring. So far, he already has 3 home runs. He's tied for the league lead in home runs with like 7 or 8 other guys right now, including another one from his own team, Kyle Stowers, who's been hitting very well this spring. But entering the year, there's not really a spot for Cowser. Obviously, you know, Baltimore is pretty loaded all around. It's looking like starting outfield for them. Left to right, it's going to be Austin Hayes, Cedric Mullins, and Anthony Santander. You know, DH is going to be Mountcastle. He can't play infield, so kind of on the outside looking in right now, probably a AAA to start the year, but this is a guy where, you know, maybe it's not massive upside, but there's 20 homer power in the bat. There's 10 to 15 steals in the legs, and a guy that's always had a good OBP. Maybe he's more of a 250 guy, more valuable in OBP formats, but there's still a decent fantasy player here. And Chris, I think the value, perceived value, has just dropped to the point where he's a decent buy right now.
Yeah, I tend to agree. I think that when prospects come up and they don't perform, everybody jumps ship. They're no longer good. They were overrated, blah, 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 blah. So when you look at this, it's like, okay, Cowser had a very small sample in the majors, and he struggled. All right, but look at the larger part of his career and who he is. Cowser's going to play better in OBP format. Like, we know that he walks. He looked really good today. Hit a massive home run off a lefty, which has been some of the struggles. So that was huge, seeing him take that cut against Martin Perez, who Perez actually pitched really well. He had a really good-looking changeup. The breaking ball was looking good, too. So to see Cowser take advantage of a lefty, pull it, and hit it way out was certainly encouraging. He has 3 home runs already in just 11 at-bats. And while we don't want to take a lot from that sample, it is still pretty intriguing to see that Cowser's swinging a hot bat, he's not striking out, and he's hitting for power. All things you want to see from a kind of, quote, post-hype prospect. So I'm rather in on Colton Cowser still, and I think he is a great buy in a dynasty league.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
The Planet Fitness Black Card is packed with perks. Not like other gyms.
Hi, can I bring a friend to work out? Okay. Is my membership good at other locations? Okay. Do you have any other amenities?
But at Planet Fitness, the PF Black Card gets you tons of perks. Bring a friend for free anytime. Access to any of our 2,500 plus locations. Relax in the hydro massage and so much more. Join for just $1 down, $24.99 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends March 15th. See Home Club for details.
All right, moving over to pitchers now, starting with Joe Boyle, who's been one of the more impressive arms so far this spring. In 5 1/3 over 2 starts, only given up 1 earned run, 5 strikeouts, but I think most importantly, 0 walks. I mean, the stuff with Boyle has always been intriguing. Like, I don't think anybody can deny that. But what has not been intriguing for him is the walk rate. He had a walk rate around 19%. Yes, that's 19% in the minor leagues. He had 191 walks in 237 and two-thirds innings. And his last year in the minor leagues, he was a little bit better. It was 17.8%. But obviously, that's still way too high. Like, we're not talking about Mick Abel levels where he was 13, 14%. Or that's where we've had other guys like Jack Leiter, other guys like that, where we say, all right, that's an issue. Like this guy, Boyle, was a good 4 or 5% above that. But all of a sudden, like, I don't know if Oakland fixed him. That sounds weird that Oakland would fix anybody. But you look at what he did last year, and it was three starts, but still, 8.3% walk rate in those 16 innings, and now zero walks in his 5 1/3. Again, super small sample size, but given the upside that Boyle has, this is actually very intriguing that maybe we're looking at the beginning of a breakout.
Yeah, and I think that's the most notable thing is this, the walk rate. It's very interesting. You mentioned like how much it dropped in Oakland like after the trade. And then this spring, zero walks. He's throwing strikes. His fastball is sitting 99 like in the first inning. Like he's sitting 98 to 101, which is wild to see. The slider has been really good this spring. So if Boyle commands those pitches and throws strikes, he might be a high-end like SP3 type, which is wild to even think. But that ballpark is really, really good for pitchers. He's going to miss bats. He's going to strike guys out. And if he just keeps the walk rate below 10%, that's going to play all day long. And it seems like there's been tangible change, even though he says there's been nothing. He doesn't really know what happened or why he's throwing more strikes. Maybe it's just a confidence thing. Who knows? But it is notable, and Joe Boyle is really, really fun.
I'm sorry, Joe Boyle, but you don't magically go from 18, 19% to 8 or 9% without something happening. That's not how baseball works. But whatever it is, whatever voodoo magic is going on here, I'm for it. I mean, there's not going to be a lot of bright spots on that Oakland team, but Boyle could be one of them this year. So it's given, you know, how low the price tag is right now and the breakout potential here. Yeah, Boyle is a phenomenal target in Dynasty Leagues. Next guy up, Mackenzie Gore, who's also obviously been pitching very well this spring. In his two outings, five innings, three hits, one earned, one walk, and seven strikeouts. And obviously the massive prospect pedigree, former number one pitching prospect, but has had, you know, an up and down major league career, you know, hasn't been terrible. ERA has been like right around 4.5, though the xERA has been much higher. But he's been hit very hard. A hard hit rate right around 44% allowed, you know, so far in his career, an 11% barrel rate, over a 90-mile-an-hour average exit velocity. He's missed bats, though. He's, you know, last year he had three pitches above a 37% whiff rate. I mean, granted that one of those with the changeup he doesn't use. But both breaking balls are right around 37.5%, 38%. Overall, he struck out 26% of batters last year. K-minus walk rate was 16.1%. That's decent enough. And, you know, do you think, Chris, that there's, you know, maybe he's not ever going to turn into the Gore we thought he was going to back when he was, you know, the top pitching prospect. But do you think there's another level for a Gore to unlock? Or is he kind of just what he is now, mediocre rates and a decent K rate?
I think there is another level. I think just really the biggest thing would be him commanding his pitches better, locating the fastball well, putting the breaking balls down. And that's what I'm curious to see and follow. Like, is he doing these things? The fastball, it was up a tick. It's been up a tick so far this spring, which is notable. It's sitting well at the top of the zone. Like, and when he locates it, he excels. Like, he's an elite extension guy. And the curve, slider, and changeup all had really good whiff rates last year. He doesn't throw the changeup often, but the curve and the slider both had 37.5% whiff rates, which is pretty nuts. He has thrown the changeup a little more this spring, so that's something to monitor. But the biggest thing of note for me is the fastball. The velo being up, the location being better, and the IVB on it being really good. So with Gore, that's going to be the sticking point because the fastball got hit really hard last year. And if he can make that work, if he can throw the fastball up and miss bats, the secondaries are going to play. So I'm really excited to see what Gore does the rest of the spring. But he may be one that does take a step forward that maybe it's too early to write him off, or at least not see him as a potential bigger impact type.
Yeah. Yeah. And again, maybe he's never more than, I mean, do you think he could get to like, yeah, back in top 50 range for fantasy? I think that's fair.
Yeah.
Maybe he's more like, you know, 50 to 70 range, you know, more of like an SP 4-5 for fantasy, but you know, they're going to continue to throw him out there a lot. Obviously they don't have a lot of other options. Actually, Josiah Gray's looked really good this spring too, but I'm not fully out on Josiah Gray, but I'm 98% out, or at least out on assuming he's going to be more than he is at this point. But a couple of good starts this spring for both Gore and Josiah Gray, and obviously more intriguing for Gore right now. Let's go to another fun lefty that's probably roughly a decade older with Chris Sale, you know, formerly with my Red Sox, now with Chris's Atlanta Braves, obviously, in that deal for Vaughn Grissom. In his two outings, he's looked really good, and velocity's back up with Sale, higher than it was last year. And I swear, if Chris Sale turns back into Chris Sale, that, you know, we all knew and love as, you know, an ace type guy, I'm really going to think that Anthropoulos has some, like, witchcraft going on down there. But in his two starts so far this spring, 4 2/3, 3 hits, no runs allowed, 2 walks, and 9 strikeouts. Again, velocity's up. He's missing bats. I mean, he always has, but he's looked more like, you know, Chris Sale of a few years ago. Granted, it's early, get it, but it's been a very encouraging start to the spring for Chris Sale.
Yeah, it has. I mean, he's done a lot of things well. The fastball is increased in velo, which is huge. I mean, he's throwing at the top of the zone and hitters can't touch it. He's looked really, really good so far. He had 9 whiffs in the start today. I mean, 5 more strikeouts in 2 2/3 innings. Like, the slider was absolutely devastating hitters. And, like, I mean, you just look at the numbers, 9 strikeouts through 5 2/3. The velo's up. The slider's moving well. The fastball location's really good. I think Chris Sale might be back. He's got to stay healthy. That's the biggest caveat here, is that he's got to stay healthy. But if he does, there's no reason to not expect that he can throw 140 to 150 innings and provide plenty of value. So I'm excited to see what Sale can do.
Yeah, and if you're getting 140 innings out of Chris Sale, that still could potentially be like a top 25-30 arm with how many strikeouts he gets and if the ratios are low enough. But can he give you that much? That's obviously the big question with him, obviously, is always the health. So we shall see. But yeah, definitely encouraging first couple outings here from Chris Sale. Let's go to somebody that used to be teammates with Chris Sale in Garrett Whitlock, who had a very good outing. Was that today or yesterday?
2 days ago.
Yeah, so... but looking so good, looking really good so far this spring. In his 2 outings here, 5 innings, he has given up 2 runs, but 0 walks and 8 strikeouts. You know, the changeup has looked really, really good from Whitlock. And he's one where I still don't know what the long-term role for him is. I mean, just when you think you have a good, you know, idea of what it's going to be, the Red Sox keep changing. And like him and Houck, I wish they would just like pick a role for each of them. I don't even care what it is at this point, and just stick with them there. I thought it was going to be bullpen, but now he's in the running for the fifth starter spot along with Tanner Houck and maybe Josh Winkowski, but I think it's really Houck or Whitlock right now. So, I mean, what do you think of Whitlock, Chris? Like, do you think he's going to be a starter? Do you think he's going to be a reliever? You know, are you targeting him?
Yeah, he just doesn't cost you much of anything, so it's kind of worth a shot. I mean, you look at the rotation, and it looks like him and Houck are competing for that back end of the rotation, like the fifth spot. Both have been really good. So it's going to be interesting to see. Like, I think you have the top locked in with Giolito, Pivetta, Bayo, and Cutter Crawford. But then, like, okay, who's next? Because Tanner Houck's looked sharp. Yep. Garrett Whitlock's looked sharp, too. So it's hard to say for sure at this point. But I do think a healthy Whitlock will thrive in a starter's role or wherever they use him. I mean, it could be useful in either type of role. If he's in the bullpen, like, is he a multi-inning guy? Because there's kind of value there in some formats, too. So you look, the numbers have been really good so far. He has 8 strikeouts through 5 innings. He's only allowed 2 earned, pretty much just coming on the 1 home run that he allowed. But overall, like, I think I've been impressed by his command. Like, he's commanded the pitches really, really well. Hasn't walked a batter so far this spring. His home run was to Adley Rutschman. So, like, you know, Rutschman's a beast. So, it is what it is. But I do think that Garrett Whitlock is somebody that is probably a little bit underrated right now.
Yeah, I think he always has been. I just wish that he would, you know, durability's been a little bit of an issue for him lately as well. But as for Houck, I still think there's a path to Houck being the closer at some point. Whitlock, I'm still on the fence on what I think his role should be. But Houck, we've seen Houck look dominant in shorter stints, but not be able to turn over a lineup, you know, 2-3 times that you need to be a starter these days, or just in general. But has the good stuff, you know, the sinker, a lot of run on that, the slider, mixing a little bit of a splitter. So I think, you know, maybe if they trade Jansen, and I assume if they trade Jansen, they'd probably trade Chris Martin as well. It's not out of the question to see maybe Houck get some saves second half of the year. Maybe that's a pipe dream, but I think both are decent targets just because of how low the value is right now. But moving on to the next guy here, and Ryan Nelson, who obviously debuted back in 2022, but pitched most of the season last year with the Diamondbacks and did not pitch overly well in 144 innings. Had a 5.31 ERA, 1.42 WHIP, and only 96 strikeouts in 144 innings. But so far this spring, in two outings, 10 strikeouts to zero walks, one run allowed, which is on a solo shot, in five innings. Chris, what are your thoughts on Nelson? You thinking there's maybe some a nice rebound coming?
Possibly. His fastball is up, which is good to see. I know we're talking smaller samples, but a 2-3 inning start so far where the velo has looked good. His locations look better. He's missed a lot more bats, which is also pretty intriguing too. So, you know, Nelson is going to have a spot. Like, we know he's going to pitch innings, so that's obviously an important thing to have is somebody that can throw innings, and he's going to do that. And then on the flip side, obviously, when you look at what he brings to the table, yeah, it's not really flashy, but if everything sticks and the velo stays up, then yes, I am very interested in Ryan Nelson, especially in the deeper format. He's very useful.
Yeah, that's where I'd be looking at him now, is deeper. I still have, I don't know, I didn't have him last year, so I wasn't like burned by him, but last year there wasn't a lot of good last year, so I'm kind of more like in the wait and see right now, but definitely has looked good this spring. I'll give him that, but we'll see how the next few outings for him go this spring. Next guy, we got Casey Mize, you know, former top prospect, former number one overall pick, a guy that I saw live back, actually twice, back when he was still a top prospect back in 2019 and pitched pretty well back then. But obviously since then, for him and Matt Manning, who we talked about a few episodes ago in the post-hype, hasn't really been very swimming last couple of years for either guy, but still only 26 years old. And a guy that obviously missed all of last year, and in 2022 only pitched two games, only has really one season of a big sample size. That was in 2021, 30 starts, 3.71 ERA, 1.14 WHIP, you know, both solid, but the K rate has never been there. It's been below 20% every year of his career so far, but pitching well this spring, Chris, the velo has been up, and it was up the first outing. We're like, all right, let's see if that's, you know, if that sticks. And then he pitched again today, and fastball was up 2 miles an hour. Slider's up 1.2 today. Knuckle curve is down, but maybe he's just trying different grips with that. And the splitter's up 1.2 miles an hour. You know, he's going to need to miss more bats, because even if he's a decent ratio guy that's not giving you much strikeouts, still not a lot of value at some deeper formats, but maybe there is a bounce back coming from Casey Mize.
Yeah, it's really fun to see and watch, because he had a back surgery and he had Tommy John. So it's like two brutal injuries for pitchers. And he comes back and, like, you know, spring training velocity matters in some cases. This is a case where it matters. He was injured. He hasn't pitched since like April of 2022. And now he's back and things look good. He still isn't missing bats. I mean, the fastball has looked pretty hittable despite having more velo and more ride to it. Like, significantly more IVB on the fastball than we've seen. He's never averaged above 93 at any point in his career. He's been sitting 95.5, which is crazy to see. And then you look, but he only had two whiffs today on 13 swings. That's a 15% rate. He did get some called strikes, but still, a 21% CSW. Not really good either. So, Mize is going to need to miss more bats to be successful. I know he was facing the Yankees pretty much regular lineup, especially at the top half, but he's going to be facing MLB lineups in the regular season. So, got to miss bats. I think it's encouraging, and I hope that we'll see him throw the splitter more. Like, the fastball improvements are good, but just throw the secondaries more. Like, that's really the biggest thing, and I think that if he does, there's a chance that we see him blossom into a useful fantasy starter. Like, we're not talking an ace. We're maybe talking like a SP4, which is usable, but he still has some work to do to get there.
Yeah, and I'm not sure he ever gets to the point where, you know, maybe he can get close to a league average K rate, but even during his days at Auburn, he was never a big, massive K rate guy, even when he was peak value and, you know, number one pick and all that. So, I don't know. I'm more out than in on Mize, but he's cheap enough. So, if you want to try to, you know, buy into a potential reclamation project here, you know, maybe. But I'd rather buy in on Mize than this next guy. I am 110% out on this guy. I already was, but he comes in the spring training. And, okay, Alec Manoah is who I'm referring to here before I get any further. First outing of the spring a few days ago on the 27th. Inning and two-thirds, 3 hits, 4 runs, a walk, 0 Ks, 3 hit batters. Velocity was down. Actually, it was up a little bit, actually, but I thought it was down. But only 2 called strikes and 38 pitches. I could go out and get 2 called strikes and 38 pitches. I'm not even joking about that either. No, actually, I kind of am. But, and now he's, you know, he has a, what they call it, a cranky shoulder. I think the report I saw were cranky shoulder, which is a fun word to use there. But, I mean, I just don't think, he's been so bad for so long now. And really, I believe it kind of coincided a little bit when they, you know, changed the ball and used a less tacky ball. So maybe that was a big reason for his success before. But, I mean, I am just 100% out of Manoah right now. I mean, I know he was a fun name. He was a guy that was, you know, a top. I mean, what do you think peak Manoah was, like, what, ranked as a top 20 fantasy arm-ish?
Yeah, at least.
Yeah, and now he's not even usable. So I get it. Maybe if you had him, you're, like, hoping for a rebound. But I just don't see it coming.
Yeah, he supposedly worked out all offseason, got into better shape, because I do think the pitch clock affected him last year.
Yeah.
Like, he was just not in good enough shape to handle it, but he doesn't look to be handling things well right now either. I know it's a small sample still, but to come out and look like he did is not really ideal, so I'm pretty out on Alec Manoah.
Yeah, it's hard to be in at this point, and yeah, he just looks so bad, and there's no signs of him turning it around anytime soon. But let's close the episode out on a positive note here with one of, you know, the most impressive, maybe the most impressive arm so far in spring training, and that's Bailey Ober. I mean, yeah, he's allowed 5 runs total, but only one of those was earned. 4 1/3, 1 earned run on the home run, 2 walks, and 10 strikeouts in a start yesterday, or on Saturday when you listen to this. He had a 55% CSW and a 55% whiff rate. Chris, have you ever seen a 55%? I get it's spring training and it was a shorter outing. I get it. But have you ever seen a 55% CSW before?
No, that's pretty wild.
I'd have to ask Alex Fast or like Nick Pollock, because I know they keep track of that. If that's not the highest of all time, it's got to be up there for sure. And you look at his outing, again, from Saturday, when he went 3 innings, just gave up a solo home run to Nick Castellanos, 0 walks, 7 Ks. Velocity's up 2.3 miles an hour on that four-seam. He was running 91.3 last year, was 93.6 the other day. He's throwing a harder slider now, and it's kind of like a slider-cutter hybrid, but he wanted to get something in a different velocity band that he wasn't really in previously. So now he's really in 4 velocity bands. You know, the low to mid-90s fastball slider is now more like in the 86-mile-an-hour range. Changeup's more 82, and then the curveball in the upper 70s. Also has a sweeper that he throws occasionally as well. But there's been a lot of positive talk about Bailey Ober. The value is already skyrocketing, and this is a guy, Chris, that, you know, I could see him realistically being a top 100 dynasty player by the All-Star break, maybe sooner.
Yeah, Ober already has if not the highest floor of any pitcher in baseball. It's just there. I mean, he throws so many strikes, he commands his pitches extremely well, and he continued to command those extremely well, even with the velocity jump. It's like, his fastball already plays up because his extension's so good. Like, he has, like, the best extension of any pitcher in baseball, so the fastball really gets on you. I mean, the IVB jump was 2.5 inches while adding 2.5 miles an hour. That's pretty notable. Eric mentioned the slider cutter pitch, setting that new velocity band like 85 to 86 miles an hour, which I thought was pretty notable. His sweeper was showing like increased horizontal movement. And he threw 30 of his 38 pitches for strikes on Saturday. No shocker there. So you think sometimes when guys throw new pitches, add velo, have better stuff, that the command may go, but that's not the case here. Ober is a really good arm. His stock is going to soar if this continues. And I'm pretty excited to see where it goes, because I think a velo jump over 3 innings is more notable. Like, yep. 3 innings of work and a 2.5 mile an hour jump is something to talk about here. And especially when you're throwing new pitches too, and still throwing for strikes. I'm way in on Bailey Ober.
Yeah, and it's not like this was his first outing either. His second outing of the year, of the spring, excuse me. Velocity's still up. Yeah, definitely, I'm pretty in on Ober right now, and that price tag is only going to keep going up. So this is really a situation where you can buy high. I mean, the value's already gone up since last year, but probably continues to go up. So still a decent buy there. But that is going to wrap us up live from our St. Petersburg hotel room. Thanks to everyone for tuning in again this episode. We hope you enjoyed it. We'll be back again on Wednesday with more spring training action and more recaps there. Make sure you check out Rotoball or use a code Toolshed, and we'll see you again in a couple days. But until then, everyone take care.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.